major concern the fact that they're inexperienced, or is there something else that's more of a concern?
The inexperienced part will sort of take care of itself, because many times the biggest leap, and this is a cliche, everybody has said it, the biggest leap for college athletes usually comes between your freshman and sophomore year, because you now understand what it takes to compete at that level.
Mm-hmm.
When you come in as a freshman, I don't care how good you are, there are very, very few people, think like the Ben Simmons and guys like that, that they probably didn't need college anyway. Nope. But for the most part, and this goes across almost every sport, a kid coming from high school, I don't care how good he is, all state, all country, whatever, he's still an 18 or she's an 18-year-old kid now playing against 22-year-olds that might be seniors, or 23-year-olds if they've taken a redshirt year.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big difference between being an 18-year-old and you're dominating kids that are all about your age. Now you step up and you've got adults. I mean, people that have been in the weight room, that have done all their growing, everything else. Suddenly that makes it a little bit tougher. So between your freshman and sophomore year, you make that jump, because all of a sudden you go, okay, I know what it's like now to be in the weight room. I got pushed around for an entire year. I got to get stronger. I got to get faster. I got to get better. So I'm not sure. We'll still be very young. Mm-hmm. They're still going to be very inexperienced. My concern is they lost one of the best rebounders in the country in Shavon Thompson.
Yep.
And I don't know where that rebounding slack will get picked up. Jalen Jenkins, who's going to be a senior this year, mm-hmm. very good down low. He struggled with foul trouble during the season this past year, but seemed to figure it out later on in the season, did a much better job, played very, very well the last month or so of the season.
Yep.
He's going to be one of the starting forwards. Then it's just a matter of who else can mm-hmm. you fit in there. Do you go small with like a guy like DeAndre Abram, who's 6'7", but only weighs about 190? Yeah. I mean, he's a thin kid.
Yeah.
Or if Danny Dixon or some other guys that are coming in. There's a kid, Troy Tamara, from upstate New York that's coming in, mm-hmm. about 6'8". Incredible athlete, really good leaper. But again, freshman, how does he translate mm-hmm. dominating kids at, you know, who are 6'1", 6'2", trying to guard him in high school to guys that are going to be 6'9", 6'10", that he's going to go up against. So I think rebounding is going to be one of the biggest things that Coach Paulson really has to try to figure out, who's going to be the guys that are going to be big rebounds for them.
Right. I completely agree. I mean, you mentioned the name, you know, Shavon Thompson. He was a senior, graduated. He went undrafted, but he didn't get invited to the New Orleans Pelicans summer league camp.
Right.
He unfortunately didn't make the summer league team, but you could see how big of a talent he is. And he was a tremendous, like, rebounder. He definitely had the size. But I want to go back to the coaching. And,
okay.
You know, we talked about Coach Larrañaga. He was here from 97 to 2011. All their NCAA appearances happened when he was the coach, and he took that level of success with him to the University of Miami. He kind of turned him into a basketball school as well. They made the NCAA tournaments the last few years, where we know Miami is known as a football school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, over the last few years, they've had some legal issues. but aside from that, he's an excellent head coach. So, you know, let's compare Larrañaga and Coach Paulson today. I know Coach Paulson at Bucknell, he also struggled his first couple years, but I think he made the NCAA tournament in his third year at Bucknell. So we know that the great coaches, or the really good coaches, have there's something about them, something unique, a signature about them. For example, you know, Phil Jackson in the NBA. What was unique about him was when his players were struggling on the court, he would never call timeouts.
Right.
He would allow his players to fix their issues and kind of come up with solutions. And so what were the special traits or uniqueness about Larrañaga and Paulson, some similarities and differences? And do you see Coach Paulson having similar success or even more success than what Larrañaga had?
Well, to have more success, we'd have to go to an NCAA final. and I'd be all for that. It'd be fantastic. It'd be great. I'm not going to put that on Coach Paulson yet. But I think, starting with Larrañaga, I think one of the main things, and you see this as well with Coach Paulson, is, again, the demand of the players to be a good representative of the university and of themselves and of the program. Basically, he wasn't going to put up with anything. And you had certain standards that you had to abide by, mm-hmm. whether it was in practice, in the classroom, in public, how you treated people on campus. One of the main things, and I don't know, it's changed so much in the last 10 years, 15 years, but one of the things that Larrañaga never allowed them to do, as you see all the time when, especially NCAA tournament or any of the big games of the week, and they got the camera guy watching everybody come down the steps off the bus.
Yep.
And without fail, every single guy coming off that bus has their Beats headphones on or whatever it is as they're getting off the bus. Larry Nagel wouldn't allow that. Mm-hmm. When we were at the NCAA tournament going through the Final Four run, their guy, he told them, you are not allowed to wear headphones when you're getting off the bus. Riding to the arena, okay, fine. You want to use the, you know, your music to get you hyped up. As soon as the bus gets parked, the headphones come off. We walk in as a team. We engage each other as a team. You're not in your own world.
I like that.
And that was a big, big difference compared to everybody else. And I think it was one of the reasons that they, and the guys speak to this as well, that they were so connected as a team because Larenaga forced them to interact with each other.
Right.
He told them, now I don't know how he enforced it, but all the guys said that they did it. He also told them no headphones as they walked around campus, that he didn't want them isolated from the rest of the student body. And he said, you know that somebody sees you with headphones on, they're not going to talk to you. They're not going to say hi to you. They're going to be like, oh, he's in his own world, not going to bother him. So they weren't allowed to have headphones on walking across campus. It forced them to then be interactive with their fellow students. Now, that's great until you make the NCAA tournament and you're all of a sudden in the Elite Eight and all of a sudden in the Final Four, and then everybody is stopping you on campus
because
you don't have your headphones on, and they're stopping and asking you for, you know, can you take a picture with me real quick or whatever it is. So that kind of backfired, I guess, for that week. But it was one of the things that's what made them a part of the campus. I think that's why everybody pulled for them. It's one thing to make an NCAA tournament, win a couple games, and everybody gets excited.
Mm-hmm.
But I think everybody was really, really happy for them because they felt like they knew them. It felt like even if you just had a class with them or you'd only ever seen them because you went to the Patriot Center at that time, called the Patriot Center, now Eagle Bank, to watch a game, you still felt like you knew Lamar and Tony and Jai and Gabe and all those guys because they weren't just, okay, I'm leaving from practice, headphones go on, I'm going to walk to my dorm room. All right, now I got to go to my class, headphones go on. I sit down in class with my hood up and don't talk to anybody.
Right.
So I think that was a big thing with Larenaga making sure that they were involved in all aspects of the campus. They would go and watch, you know, soccer games or the baseball team or whatever occasionally. They do it all the time, but every once in a while you see those guys being out there. I thought that was a big deal for them. So,
but how much blame can we put on Paulson on that? Because I feel like now any day what I'm pointing to is cell phone, you know, smartphones, it's all around this technology. So how much can we put blame on Paulson for that?
Well, I mean, blame as far as...
As far as I'm saying, like, the connecting of the team.
You're
talking about headphones when they're walking out of the bus. I mean, like, how much can the coach really control outside?
Well, I mean, outside, it's tough. Yeah. I mean, because, again, unless you have one of the assistant coaches or somebody or manager ratting these guys out, saying, hey, I saw so-and-so walking across campus with his headphones on and his hood up and not talking to anybody, I don't know that it's as big of a deal now because of the cell phone aspect of it. I mean, look, let's remember in 06, there were no iPhones yet. I mean, that's hard for a lot of people to wrap their head around because iPhones, it just seems like they've been around forever now. There were no iPhones then, so they didn't have all the apps and games and everything else to distract them, so it was probably a little bit easier then.
Yep.
I still think that Paulson, much like Larenaga, and there are a lot of similarities between the two, still wants them connected to other students at the university.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about, hey, look, you're just because you're a basketball player doesn't mean that you're special. Okay? Doesn't mean that you have any more right than anybody else here. You still got to go to class. You still got to pass your class. And then you got to come and do your work, you know, in basketball. And I've heard him talk about, you know, you think that you have it hard because you have to get up and you have to run at 6 a.m. or lift weights at 6 a.m. or whatever else. And he said, you know, why don't you ask somebody in your class when you sit down next to them if they're working a job to put themselves through school?
Yep, there you go.
Because maybe they have it just as hard as you do, maybe harder because they're not getting school for free.
Yep.
So, I mean, he's kind of made that point to them, you know, on more than one occasion when guys start grumbling and mumbling, which freshmen, we had a lot of them, tend to do. I think he's done a good job keeping them grounded. And that, to me, is the – if you can get guys – to buy into, A, interacting with each other. It's only going to help you on the court. But B, also understanding the area that you're in and the community that you're in here at Mason. I think people will root for them, and that will help because attendance will go up because they'll be like, hey, these are nice guys. You know, this guy's okay. I'm going to go watch him play because he was nice to me in my, I don't know, stat class or English class or whatever, as opposed to, man, these guys are barely 500. I'm not going to go watch them. The guy was a jerk. He didn't even speak in class. Tried to say hi to him, and he blew me off. Just got his headphones in.
Right.
That's when you get both of those together, bad player, you know, bad players or an unsuccessful team, plus not wanting to engage in the community, and it's tough when you're losing, but it's something that you have to do. You get those two combined, that's when nobody will care about what happens with the basketball program and nobody